Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Weven, and alongside me, as always, is my co-host and fellow purple alien, Mr. Spencer.
Why am I purple?
Navi Williams.
Doesn't even make any sense.
Well, we've seen blue and we've seen green, so I'm just throwing it out there.
I guess.
Speaking of strange, we also brought with us the intern slash name is still in negotiations, Amy, with us today as well.
I swim good. Yeah.
Okay. We got a great show in store as we are going to be talking about the recently dropped, long-awaited, very long-awaited sequel to James Cameron's 2009 epic fantasy film Avatar, and that is Avatar 2: The Way of Water. So stick around as we dive into that, because that is going to be a conversation and a half. So yeah, we're all excited. I don't know if you can tell. Spencer's excited. Amy's not. But before we dive into that, Spencer, why don't you give us them opening credits?
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. You can check us out on our website. We have a website, ladies and gentlemen, and you can check us out on it.
Yes,
it
is this the year of our Lord 2023. We finally have a website.
Tis true. Head on over to filmlosophers.com, where we got everything from anime, romance, comedy, action, family films. At times.
What was the question?
There was an emphasis there. You can check us out at our website, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire. Find us there. Subscribe, follow, click on the links. Let us know what you think. We would love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line in the comments below. And if you think we're doing a good job, give us a 5-star review. I think we've earned it.
We have.
We'll give you more of those social links at the end of the show. Like I said, we are precociously excited to talk about this new movie, as it has been something that has been long speculated what it was going to be about and kind of the nature of how it's going to be delivered. But before we do, we are going to revisit an old favorite, because Amy hasn't come up with much of them lately, and so we have to finally tell her that her contract with us stipulates she has to give us at least one once a month. So here we are with a new, brand new 2023 Jane Unseen. So tell us what you unseen.
We don't have a theme song.
No, you don't. Jane Unseen. Why are you both doing this? This is a podcast. We got two people doing a robot over here.
No one will ever see it. It was so
it's
good.
Fine. That's why.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So of course, 2023. Hi.
Wow.
I know. I am still very far in the depths of things I haven't seen, but I'm going to surprise everyone because I actually watched the 1968 Treasure, Planet of the Apes.
You barely just saw this movie?
Yeah.
Why?
Because
you're a comic book person, aren't you?
Yeah, I am a comic book person. So here is in explaining this.
Oh boy.
The Simpsons ruined it for me straight from the jump.
You know what's so weird? I was literally thinking about that.
Dr. Seuss. Yeah. So I remember being a kid and being a teenager, and all I knew was the "you dang dirty apes." Like, I knew that. And then The Simpsons did that musical adaptation of it, mm-hmm. which I was like, okay, I guess this is all I have to learn from this movie. There was no other reason for me to watch it.
Well, and if you look at it from 1968 up until now, so many different people have spoofed on it, from Futurama to Robot Chicken to Family Guy
Everybody.
To Simpsons to every single mention of the iconic line and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of not surprising that you've already seen bits and pieces of it from other spoofs.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of sad to hear that you haven't seen it up until this point.
Well, I hadn't. That is the kicker. And mind you, also, that means this also includes, I did see the first one of the reboot from 2011, The Rise of the Planet.
That's the prequel.
Okay, well, I saw the prequel after I watched the original, but I have not seen anything else regarding that. So me and, I didn't know. Anywhoski. This was, I was pleasantly surprised to find that Rod Serling was actually one of the screenplay writers, which made sense when I was watching it because there were a lot of moments that felt very Twilight Zone and it was nice. Mm-hmm. Charlton Heston. Okay. All I knew.
Oh my
all,
gosh.
Sorry. All I knew him from was the Ten Commandments. That's literally.
Spoken like a former church kid like the rest of us. There you go.
Moses. But this was actually really interesting to watch, especially where I had to make sure that I was keeping in check my feelings about the practical effects, the prosthetics, the makeup, all the hard work that was going into it, people that were trying to figure out how to move their mouth to enunciate, to make their masks look real. So I definitely have to give props and mad props and shout outs to those guys. I hated Nova. She was just there to be pretty. That was it. That was it. And yeah, I realized that for the time, how it was wonderfully groundbreaking and being as far, I don't know how old this movie is, 68. I don't want to, math no good
so,
me.
So you're looking at about 54 years?
Oh, dang. Yeah. So 80, I should, 80, 80, if I had held out for the 60 years, you could have all yelled at me.
You know, if you would have waited that long, I think we would have
if
yelled
If I held
at
up
you.
For one more year, it would have been 55. Dang it. Missing big numbers. Yeah.
What?
Okay, I don't know.
Keep going.
So yeah, it was really interesting. I actually was able to appreciate what they did in regards to this movie, considering the time period that it came out in, the story that they were trying to tell about science versus religion. Me trying not to laugh at lots of sections was very hard, but I did it. I did it well. And then being able to...
She's patting herself on the back for not laughing too much at this
too
movie.
Too much. I mean, Dr. Zayasin knows how to enunciate, man. That orangutan mask was all up and moving. And then abruptly, after finishing that, jumping to the 2011 prequel and being like, oh, I can actually appreciate this. And in juxtaposition, see all of the steps that have been made forward. And yeah, there's monkeys.
Yeah. I mean,
and
when you talk about
monkeys,
when you talk about two movies that have the word apes in it, I would assume there's some kind of primate in there. Mm. In the first prequel, you got obviously James Franco, you got
John Lithgow,
you got,
which just made me want to watch Buckaroo Banzai.
Tom Felton.
That's right, he's a bad guy.
You got quite a few number of folks in there, as well as the illustrious Andy Serkis doing the mocap, as well as vocal talent work for Caesar in the film. So what was it about the first film, The Planet of the Apes, 1968? What was it about it that you felt was the most groundbreaking part of that film?
For me, I'm going to actually say the makeup and the prosthetics. There was so much work that went into this, not only in the design, but the application and how much it looked legitimate. Like, it didn't look like they were people in ape suits, especially the performers that had figured out a way, especially towards the second act. You could see the performers that understood how best to emulate and enunciate to give the full spectrum of facial and emotional responses that were needed for you to get into it. That was really cool. Also, I appreciated, you know, that Charlton Heston was able to smoke a cigar in space and not blow up his rocket ship.
Well, spaceships back then were more advanced.
Yeah, of course, so much more advanced.
Obviously.
We climbed into our deli sleepy places,
if I'm not mistaken, this movie takes place from launch date 10 years into the future from its release date of the film. Wow. And then it jumps forward, I think, 2,000 years, 3,000 years or something.
I think it's like 3,000, yeah.
It's insane. So here's the $1 million question. Mm. Spencer, have you seen this movie?
Yeah.
Okay, thank God. Okay, there is a God.
I don't know when the first time I saw it was, because like it's so ingrained in culture.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. This is one of those movies where I feel like every nerd or sci-fi geek has to have that rite of passage of seeing Planet of the Apes once. Mm. You can kind of kick the sequels to the curb. I'm not too fond of the sequels.
I haven't seen any of the sequels.
Neither have I. Like, I haven't seen them fully. But you get this one, and this is one of those ones where you get a lot of people who kind of measure your geek card, if you will, by whether or not if you've seen this. You know, it's almost like a one of those punch cards, whatever. Oh, you've seen it? Okay, here we go.
I didn't know this was on the punch card list.
Oh, it's definitely on the punch card.
I keep putting things on that punch card list. I keep trying to get them to take it off.
They just keep moving the line, man. They just keep moving
the line. You blew it up! So, any other last thoughts before we transition?
All I can have in my head besides the Dr. Zaya song is, yes, they finally made a monkey.
Okay, going back to that Simpsons episode. I'm sorry. I love the nonsense musical from The Simpsons that's just like parodying the Planet of the Apes. Mm-hmm. It was great, especially that song at the end where he's like, I hate every ape I see from chimpanzee A to chimpanzee. I was like, yes. That's so dumb, but also kind of smart to put that into a song. I love it.
There you go.
So good.
Well, that is Jane on Scene. Of course, if you want to check out more, we'll give you the social links at the end of the episode. But we are transitioning over from one chaotic film to another as we dive into the long-awaited sequel of James Cameron's first sci-fi blockbuster hit, and that is Avatar 2, The Way of Water. This movie is one of those films where it's like a unicorn. You hear about them. You hear people talk about them. In fact, you even hear people allegedly say that they've seen evidence of it, but you never thought you would ever see it, ever. And to be quite frank, I still don't believe we saw it. That is Avatar 2, the sequel that James Cameron has been promising since 2009, that's just never come to fruition until now. And we have done a service to you as we have seen the movie to talk about it here. So before we move forward anymore, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Jake Sully and Neytiri have formed a family in the aftermath of the victory, and they are doing everything they can to stay together. However, they must leave their home and explore the regions of Pandora when a threat straight from the grave resurfaces. Jake must fight a difficult war against the very people who brought him to Pandora in the first place.
Directed and produced by James Cameron, the film stars Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Stephen Lang, Joel David Moore, with Sigourney Weaver returning in an additional role. New cast members also include Kate Winslet, Cliff Curtis, Edie Falco, and Jermaine Clement. A couple of key pieces of information about this film. There's actually a 13-year gap between the first Avatar film and this film, giving it one of the longest development times, as it was announced almost immediately following the first film's success. As I stated, 13 years, seriously. Which is interesting because if this record actually stands, it would be interesting if it actually comes to fruition. Nicolas Cage was mentioning that they are talking about a Face-Off sequel.
I'm in the theater day one for that film sequel.
We're looking at from 1997. So we're looking at least 25 years.
Yeah, take the Face-Off again.
Exactly. Face-Off again. another piece of information, which I thought was actually pretty cool in terms of like technical side of information. Weta Effects used its own data center to render most of the scenes of the film. However, processing capacity from Amazon Web Services was also added in the last months. Rendering each frame took 8,000 thread hours, which is an equivalent to the combined power of 3,000 5,000 virtual CPUs in a data center for an hour. At some point, all available capacity of Australian AWS data centers were used to render scenes for this film. This is, we're talking about Weta here. Weta is not just like this small little entity. They're a huge effects team. And they're known for some of the most incredible work out there, from, you know, Lord of the Rings all the way to some of the CG work that you see nowadays that actually looks good in movies. So for the fact that so many data centers were used just for this film alone, I don't know. Last piece of info. According to James Cameron and projected numbers, the Avatar sequels will cost collectively over $1 billion. Look like you were going to say something other than growl.
I do, but I would like to maintain those words that I have in my choice opinions of such things for a later time within this conversation.
Okay, sounds good. So we're diving into this movie, and spoiler alert, we are going to talk about spoilers. Obviously, whenever we say that, we don't usually mean full spoilers, but if we do mention something that does tend to give anything away, we would rather you be warned than, you know, whatever. So be warned. This is your warning. As we dive in, let's go and talk about the Avatar films as a franchise itself.
It's two films. It's now.
Yeah. It's so we can technically now call it a franchise. However, it has been just a pain in the film lovers side.
It took us.
Yeah. For so long, like 13 years. What do you guys actually, did you guys actually go to the theaters to see the first film?
Yes.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
How'd you see it?
I watched it on TV.
Mm.
I rented it and I watched it on TV. I was kind of like, I don't want to poison the barrel of water already, but I was like, okay, it's a sci-fi film, but I have a lot of problems with it from the jump, even in the first one. And so I came out of it going, oh, eh.
You're talking about the first one?
Yeah.
Okay. You, Spencer, you went to go see it in theaters.
Multiple times.
And I actually went to go see it in theaters in 3D. This was one of those movies where you don't want to find yourself in a situation where if you get motion sickness, these movies are probably not your best friend.
Hello, me.
However, that first film actually was pretty groundbreaking for a lot of its 3D ability.
Mm-hmm.
13 years later, I'm not the biggest fan of like 3D films. So when I went to go see it, I saw it in regular digital, non-3D. Mm. Amy, what did you go see it in?
The one where I wouldn't puke my guts out.
So non-3D. Spencer, you saw it in 3D.
Yes.
Okay. Now here's
things coming at you everywhere around this answer.
Here's, I think, the first, I guess, not revelation, but confession I have about the 3D effect work in that first movie.
Mm-hmm.
Avatar was probably the first film where I felt like the 3D wasn't a gimmick.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the first film really gave us something unique. There was a lot of depth to a lot of the scenes, seeing like a lot of the floating islands and the floating mountains and things like that. It was really cool. Unfortunately, this time around, I just wasn't able to with holidays and whatnot, craziness. But I have to hope that that was a highlight that we'll talk about within the 3D parameter that you saw, Spence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
so weird though, because now we saw in different formats, that means we have slightly different experiences with the same movie,
which is good, because then you got something unique to bring to the conversation about that.
Yeah. Sorry, I get pukey if you try to spin me around and wiggle me around in a seat.
Well, I'll never try to do that.
Please don't do that. don't spin the studio chairs. No one wants to see me hurl.
So with the first film in mind, what were some of your guys' expectations for this film? Let's start with Spencer.
So, the first film was basically Pocahontas in space, which I feel like we can all pretty much agree on that. So, for the most part, I was like, so is he going to borrow from, like, Pocahontas 2 this time, or is it from a different movie? I was really
curious. Journey to Jake the New Sully World.
Jake Sully goes to England
There's
and learns.
They're fighting a really skinny king, and surprise! is, you get a pretty dress.
No, honestly, I was wondering, I feel like this movie's going to pull from something, and I wonder what that something is. Mm. And so I was also expecting the movie to kind of continue to be visually impressive along with meh story. Hmm. That's what I was kind of going in here thinking about. What about you, Amy?
Early miss. So full transparency. This literally almost took an act of God to get me into the cinemas. I think I ended up 4 times I had bought tickets and was unable to attend, albeit sickness, health, departures, arrivals. It wasn't working. Mm-hmm. So biting the bullet to finally get into a seat to see it literally on day of recording was something that also tainted my first impressions or my expectations, not even my impressions. So again, I think I kind of agree with you, Spencer. I knew I didn't really like the first one. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because of the CGI. It wasn't because of the design. I just didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Meh. It was a meh. Yeah. And Pocahontas in space is the nicest way to put it. with this one, I was like, they're wet.
They're wet.
They're wet. And it's probably going to have amazing VFX, amazing CGI. There's so much that has changed over all these years. So I was like, the expectation is it's going to be visually pretty. But what other story that is going to be original do you have to tell me? Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Eddie?
I was kind of in the same boat. When it came to the first film, it literally mirrored every single story that has that same plot thread. Mm-hmm. The traitor in the midst of the enemy turns sides and becomes the hero for the enemy. It's literally classic white savior.
It is white savior complex.
Yeah, complex, mindsets. And so I was like, all right. So the first movie was pretty. It was all right. Like, it was one of those movies where, kind of in that same mindset like you had, Spencer, it was visually a first. Mm-hmm. When it came to like what it was attempting to do with the 3D and whatnot. Storyline was okay. But I think that was a lot of also part of my mindset in going into this one without doing the 3D was, can this story hold on its own without needing an added gimmick?
Yes. It's so weird because like I just assumed before seeing the movie that the answer would be no.
Well, we're going to talk about that, but you wouldn't be too far off.
Me and my non-swivel seats are you. Happy.
Honestly, I was concerned that this movie franchise was literally taking its time because it wanted people to forget how much it bit off of their stories. Mm-hmm. And I was going into this hoping that the story was unique enough that it didn't follow kind of already preset, pre-templated formulas that other movies had already done or other stories have already done. Because if you're waiting 13 years for a movie, you better have something original. Like, you cannot say, hey, it's taken me 5 years to do this, but I finally got it, and it's literally someone else's product. Like, you can't do that, because...
You're not supposed to.
No, you shouldn't do that at all. And within the framework of this movie...
There's a big old but.
Within the framework of this movie, I felt like there was just no possible way James Cameron would stoop to that level in so many ways. I don't care if you started this story 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 3 years ago. This movie needed... You took all this time. I don't care about the technology that needed to catch up. What mattered was the story worth getting engaged in? And so, transitioning into first impressions right outside the gate. Spencer has probably been sitting on this the longest, so I'm going to let Spencer go first in terms of first impressions. I will give you that.
I have not talked to you about this at all yet.
No.
James Cameron owes me $1,000.
Oh, you're going to...
Really? Okay, keep going. I like this.
Here's why.
Oh, boy.
Okay. So...
wait, hold on. So before we get into that, is just because there's precedence now for this in recent news, Is this legit? Or are you just...
No, I'm not.
Because I would probably jump in on that. But just say, go ahead.
It's just me being dumb. But, so yes, I am at Avatar. And it is like near the third act. And I'm like, okay, this is going as it is. I have a phone. I'm a modern man living in the now. So I have a phone. And for some reason it goes off. And I'm like, that's weird. So I just turn it off, right?
Yeah.
Get closer to the end of the movie. I just hear... and I'm like...
Oh my god.
No.
So, wait for the movie to finish. I wait for the lines to come up. And I'm like, okay, so here we go. Because no one was really sitting next to me, so okay. It's still there. So I look in the seat. I don't see it. I look in the seat next to it. I don't see it. So I go find the people who clean the thing. I'm like, hey, sorry, but blah, 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 blah. They're like, oh yeah, we'll look for it. About 10 minutes fast. They're like, so we couldn't find it. So I'm like, hey, can you show me how to do the thing? And they're like, okay, yeah, here's how the seat comes apart. And so now I know how to take those seats apart.
Excellent.
Oh my gosh. That's going to be fun if we ever lose something again. It wasn't there. I couldn't find it. And I turned it off because I got a call, so I couldn't do the find my thing. And so it's just in there somewhere. And I left my number with the front desk people, and I'm like... Let me know if you find it. And they're like, And so...
Did you lock it or something? Is there like a security parameter?
No, I just turned it off because I thought it was making a noise, but I couldn't tell because the movie was on.
Your phone got eaten by...
James Cameron.
Yes. So James Cameron owes me $1,000.
I am on with that lawsuit. We'll find a lawyer to pick it up.
Yeah. I mean, you did all due diligence. Now it is his fault.
I know. So, yeah. So, besides being extremely just like, like that, about the movie. So, after I had calmed down and had some time to think about it, I was like, I am surprised that the thing he borrowed from was himself, ultimately. Leave it at there. We can get into it later.
Interesting. Amy, first impressions. Don't do just a face and a noise, okay?
No. I was working for it. The seat I am sitting in is very warm and very comfortable. I'm glad that I can leave. And...
Hold on, let me just put my head down for a second.
This
what are you talking
movie?
About? What is happening?
I'm confused, and that was my.
That makes
you made it seem like he was holding you hostage in that theater.
Right?
I was being held hostage in this theater. Do you know why? Huh. Because it was an assignment for the show.
We'll make sure, Spencer, to put this in the record for HR when we talk about it.
At least they know where I stand.
Eddie, what about you? What were your first impressions of this movie?
My first impressions of this movie. So I've been known to be a stickler in theaters when it comes to absorbing, watching, you know, engaging with a film, especially for the show. Mm-hmm. Whenever I go to the theaters to watch a movie, I would like to at least get the money I paid for it out of it. I paid money to go see this movie, so the experience I'm getting is what I'm paying for. I don't want to hear people talking. I don't want to hear conversations. I don't want to hear Mr. Hobo Joe in the corner coughing up a storm.
I will reiterate it from now to the end of time. He shushed a baby.
I do not want to hear babies. If you're bringing a baby to a movie theater, you, my dear... need to be removed from this earth, because there is no reason for you to bring a child to a movie theater if other people are expected to watch the movie without hearing your baby make noise.
Especially
you
want on opening night.
You want to hear goo goo gaga, you take your baby home. You don't want to hear baby's first words in the middle of this massive scene, and your baby is taking the attention away from everything I'm trying to watch because I'm ADD and I can only focus on one thing at a time.
And you don't want like baby's first word to be unobtainium.
In Avengers Endgame, you couldn't hear them screaming. They were screaming with the rest of us. There were babies in my midnight showing. Keep going.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I've had children in movies where it was like, why are kids here? Like, I went to a press... I think I've talked about this. I went to a press screening for... what was that family movie? The Millers. We're the Millers or something with Jason Sudeikis.
That's not a family movie.
Well, see, the thing is, that's the way the radio station promoted it as. And I went to the theater. I got into my press seat, and I'm seeing all these families with kids with them. And the marketing rep was up in the front and said and started recognizing it too. And I had to go over and I'm like, "Hey, man, there's kids here." I'm like, "This movie's rated R, or it was PG-13 or R, whatever. If you've seen We're the Millers, you know what I'm talking about." And he goes, "Oh," and he goes to the front and he goes, "Hey, everybody," he does his little shtick, "glad you're here, blah, blah, blah. Just so you know, even though this looks like it's a family film, this is not a family movie. So if you brought children with you, chances are they probably shouldn't be seeing this."
It's rated R, by the way.
It is rated R. Okay. And there were children there.
Yep.
And it was like, and the thing is this, I felt bad. What is his name? I'm sorry for the marketing rep.
Terry.
Terry, who's so a great guy.
Like, Terry?
Shout out to Big Terry.
Yeah, he's awesome. He's a great egg.
Love him to death. However, the station that was being promoted on was a Spanish radio station.
Oh, no.
So majority of the people who were coming in spoke probably Spanish.
Oh,
and so
no.
As he's talking, there were people who were the ushers / security people who were telling the people going down the aisle who spoke Spanish.
Oh, good.
So this was the theater that we used to go to over in the other side of town.
Okay.
And there's a wall partition between the first section of seats and then the back section. Right before the movie started, every single child moved to that back section, that back wall, squatted down, and was playing games on phones and was playing little Game Boys and whatnot.
Whoa.
So they said they
like a big rule against like pulling that kind of stuff out.
I guess because of the language barrier and the inability to get people out of there, because obviously people weren't going to be taking their kids home and then coming back.
Well, they weren't going to miss the opportunity to watch a free movie.
Yeah.
So. Needless to say, I couldn't exactly, you know, innate my mindset because there was a ton of kids there, but it's just, it's not okay. So I say all this to say, I started watching this movie. My mindset was already like just permanently set in stone. Somebody's phone went off in about 15 minutes into the movie. I didn't care.
Whoa.
I was like, you can, yeah, you have your conversation sounds more important than this movie, because this movie just began like if it was pulling from every single other movie that I had seen prior to now, and was honestly making me upset the more and more it continued on. And we'll talk about that in a second, why it made me upset. But this movie just did not, without the 3D gimmick, because it honestly all it was. This movie isn't anything to like write home about.
Mm-hmm.
And that drives us to our first point in this conversation, which is the story. I actually want to hear about Spencer's thought on why he's pulling from himself in terms of story-wise, I assume.
This mostly is relegated to like the third act. But around the third act, I guess boat plane type thing starts showing up in the movie. And, you know, there's a whole stand up going off. And like, while this is happening, like I unconsciously started humming. But then like, I noticed I was humming. I was like, why on earth am I humming that song? And then all of a sudden it made sense. Because it was just Titanic again.
Mm-hmm.
It suddenly turned into Titanic with the Na'vi. And I was like, this man can't make the same movie twice.
Yes, he can.
Like, well, he can.
He can't do this.
Go for three.
It should be illegal. So, like, that was the thing about the story that, like, really just sunk down. Like, once you're getting into that third act, it is him pulling from Titanic again.
Mm.
And, like, I was just expecting, like, that violin group to be back there as that boat was sinking again. Like, it just felt like so much retreading right there.
You didn't get a sense of that whole him going back for his daughter from like True Lies? He directed True Lies.
Oh, gosh.
Man.
Except, you know, Sam Worthington isn't as verbose as Arnold Schwarzenegger.
It's very hard.
But still, you know. This story was just so many different other stories in that same narrative of the person who is now ingrained with the people that he had once been against, the people who he had fought off in the first one return. A villain once thought to be defeated return. This is like the sequel to Aladdin. So it's essentially...
No, the sequel to Aladdin was good. It wasn't the best. Okay, King of Thieves was...
That's the third one.
Was amazing. The Return of Jafar. We're talking about the Return of
Jafar. Because Jafar is essentially dead in the after the first one or gone.
He's trapped dead.
He's trapped. But he returns... And much like in this one, we get a return from somebody who should be dead from the first one, which he was dead.
But he had his little bits in his lamp that got sent back to Earth.
Also, okay, I'm so sorry. But like, this whole the person comes back thing drove me crazy when they brought this up.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this negates the whole reason for that first movie.
Yep.
Because if you have brain backups for people.
Yep.
Like, the only reason we have Sam Worthington's Jake in this movie is because his brother died. Where's his brain backup?
Yeah.
Just why didn't he? Online.
Yeah. Why didn't they just have that online to make their avatar and then have him continue with the mission?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, we're all like living.
This movie was a frustrating step after step after step of Sam Worthington and Zoe Saldana saying, Sam Worthington telling him, no, we have to protect the family. No, we have to do this, but we should fight. We need to fight, but we have to protect the family. But we need to fight, and we have to protect the family. They have the worst kids. Like, for as much training as Sam Worthington and Zoe Saldana's character puts into the whole tribe, as well as their children, they still allow their children to be close to, you know, battle scenes and very, you know, very dangerous situations to have things happen. Like, do they not know the type of people that they literally had to fight against in the first film? I figured that would have been the first set of stories that you would tell. Anybody who is pink and shorter than us should not be trusted. And if you do see them, unless we say you trust them, then you can trust them. Because it's like, you have the scientists and whatnot, and they are trusted because, you know, Jake Spider. Sully and I forget what's her name's
Sigourney
name.
Sigourney Weaver's person.
No. Well,
Grace. Dr. Grace.
Yeah, Dr. Well, not Grace.
I was talking about Zoe Saldana's character.
Neytiri?
Yes.
Neytiri, yeah. Those should have been the first set of stories they would have said. Like, anybody who has guns that is pink and short and probably wanting to kill you, you should stay away from. They are very dangerous.
Well, and that's the other thing, that if we're looking at the story, the only people that were short, pink, and had weapons that were not Na'vi at that point were the only guys that chose to stay behind that were trusted by that tribe.
Yeah.
Like, so everybody else, you could assume, homie, no touch. Like, this is part of our clan. Yeah. Leave the rest alone.
Like, okay. But the thing I don't understand is it seems like Jake did nothing after the humans left to prepare the Na'vi for the response.
No.
Because, like...
Because you know they were coming back.
Yes, like, he should have known that, and he's an idiot if he thought otherwise.
Seriously, they're American. Of course they're going to come back. Like, this is literally... I'm sorry, Amy, you were reading something before we went on air where you had mentioned James Cameron said this was a what?
Oh, my
An
gosh.
Allegorical or
oh
a metaphorical?
No, it wasn't even metaphorical. It was literally a quote he gave to The Guardian 12 years ago where he said... that Avatar, first Avatar, was a sci-fi retelling of North and South American colonial history.
No.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah, exactly what I said.
Like...
Oh, no.
The first one was maybe in the vibe of it, but it was essentially Pocahontas. Yeah. It was essentially, you know...
It's white savior complex. It's noble savages, white savior complex. Ooh, look at us. Like that, there is... I don't even want to start with the fact that the third act also felt like a bit like it's Mockingjay. Let's go! Like, there are so many things that just were off-putting with this story. It was... Like, next to, if you wanted to have like a road trip adventure with the Sullies, you know, and they're exploring the wide world of Pandora, cool. I would have been like, original story, we'd have an opportunity to protect your family, blah, blah, blah.
Or even start working in the world that they're in. Like, Pandora looks like it's an expansive world, an expansive universe of characters. Why keep it to the same issues that they were having before? If you're going to plan to make a 5-film saga, why bring back the very first villains in the first one to the second one?
Because you have nothing original to give.
Yeah.
How are you able to explore a world unless there is colonizers who are threatening now another section of your wonderful, glorious resources? I'm sorry. The dam in the Amazon, James Cameron, that you were supposed to be protesting and helping with, you know, Avatar 1, it opened in 2016. I don't see nothing about you helping there neither, bro.
I just, this movie is more frustrating than it is. Like,
it's infuriating.
It is infuriating because this movie, first off, you have this indigenous tribe in the first one, which, okay, if you're trying to make a statement to say these people are supposed to represent like the Native Americans of, you know, a pre-colonial era type United States, then okay, maybe I can see that because of the fact that it's just so closely ties to Pocahontas. Like, honestly, now you're bringing in Polynesian island Pacific Islander type
Samoan,
folks,
Fiji,
into the fray, and you have one islander, one actual, you know, Samoan actor in there.
Shout out to Cliff Curtis,
and that's it. Like, where's the representation? This is a white man trying to highlight a story about a minority group of people, a community of
multiple
people of color
communities.
Mm-hmm. And you have a white man trying to say he's got the best point of view on that matter. Yeah. Like, yeah. And not only does he have the best point of view, but he's also going to create this sci-fi epic, which honestly is just going back to the whole white safe. Because who are the two main characters that duke it out? Who are the two main fighting characters? You have Sam Worthington and Stephen Lang. Sam Worthington
old.
And Stephen Lang.
Okay, if you reverse the old.
I know. Yeah, just, he did.
I'm going to mute you. If you,
no.
You
know.
But they're two white guys.
Yeah.
Literally white guys who are in the bodies of the indigenous people. They're not even native indigenous of that planet. Mm-hmm. They are white people who have transplanted their bodies into those beings. They're not even real. And it's like there's a ton, the best, the most honest parts of this movie are when the other tribes are making fun of those people, Sam Worthington and his kids, because he's saying, hey, they're not even legit, like, natives. They're not even real. It's like when white people go into, like, you know, clubs for black folk or Mexican places, and they do something dumb like, hey, Holmes, or what's up, bruh? And
oh,
it's like,
gosh.
Dude, that is...
Do we
want to
talk about the prevalent cuz and bro that showed up in this as well? Yeah, bro. Okay, bro. I got your back, bro. Like... No, and the person that, by the way, that pointed out that they weren't real Na'vi, Kate Winslet.
The other white woman.
The
in
other
this
white woman who is the regal pregnant queen of a Pacific Islander clan.
This is one of those movies where I would honestly have much more respect if the story was not about the white people coming in to take over their land kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
If it was, you know, there's an issue with the planet's core and we have to figure it out, or there's
oh, now I just feel like it's going to turn into the movie The Core.
Yeah. Or hey. there's an animal uprising that has a spirit of its own and it's coming against AWA and they have to do something. Like, I would be on board for that. But the fact that they are continuing this persistent story of the white man, the colonizer coming into our land, like, James Cameron is sitting there like, it's those people who came into our land. Like, dude, shut up. Like, no, you have no idea what you're talking about. You may have visited places. You may have seen whatever on Wikipedia or, you know, National Geographic. But no, it's not the same. And I feel like this movie just really kind of poops on the individual experience for actual people of color. Like, take for instance movies like Moana.
Mm-hmm.
Moana is a movie where, number one, it actually has Pacific Islanders playing key roles in the film.
It only has one white guy,
and
he's
it's
a
the
chicken.
Alan Tudyk plays
Alan
the
Tudyk
chicken.
Is the chicken. Everybody else is a person of color. They are Pacific Islander. They are Hawaiian. They branch everywhere.
And mind you, I'm not going to be the first person to toot the horn for the House of Mouse. No, but the fact remains is that they knew they had enough common sense to say, Yeah, we're in a new age of, you know, recognizing the minority struggle and journey. So if we're going to make a movie about a minority, let's put the minorities in the roles, you know?
And it wasn't just even that. They went as far as to create a foundation called the Oceana Foundation. This is not me tooting, but we want to talk about the due diligence that was done in support of this, where they talked about, like, for Up, they visited Brazil and Peru to look at rocks, and this, the whole thing that Pixar built. For Moana, they opened the Oceana Foundation, which was about studying, celebrating the culture of different Pacific Islanders. They brought in so many cultural experts, as well as spending time with these people and letting them be the final say in the movie.
Now, mind you, Disney didn't follow with their practices with, like, Luca, but it's okay because we're talking about Moana.
That was Pixar.
Luca? I thought that was Disney.
I'm pretty sure it's Pixar, because I remember watching a featurette that seemed very detailed.
And well, they spent time in Italy, but they did some of it, but not as extensively as they did for Moana.
But either way, like, there was due diligence on that part to actually make the effort and to show they made the effort. James Cameron is like, I got white folk ready to do white folk things in a movie that's not about white folk. Like, that's literally all I got from the beginning parts of that movie. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, you created a language. That's wonderful. So did Star Trek. You know,
we have multiple languages.
They're still widely used. Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know anybody that knows the languages of Pandora and speaks it easily, except for Zoe Saldana, you precious angel of a woman, who was Uhura? Yes. And how many other languages did she learn for Star Trek? So many. I think that speaks more volumes about her as a human being and as a character in society and how she approaches fandoms than this one white man in a frilly, like, yellow feathered hat because he thinks he is saving people. Like, there is literally repugnant things that this man has said, which, guess what? The Guardian still has up in your article, bro, about how he felt that the plight of the the Xingu tribe in the Amazon that inspired the first Avatar movie, for him to write it, how moving it was and how much it reminded him of the plight of the Lakota Sioux. And then he said something so absolutely ridiculous that basically that if the Lakota Sioux had a time window and they could see into the future and see that their children and their grandchildren were having the highest suicide rate and dying, that they would have, quote, fought harder.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Really? Amy with the receipts. Oh my god.
Oh. Should I read the entire quote?
No. That's good enough for me.
Not even lying.
That's good enough for me. Because the fact remains, James Cameron is talking out of his butt. He's doing whatever he can to make sure that people think he's on the side of the native or the minority of the POC. All signs are pointing to the fact that he's just talking out of his butt.
Yeah, because, like, the thing that he would need to do is not, which isn't even asking that much, is both, like, just hire more people of color and get some consulting on the script.
Absolutely.
Like, it's not even that, like, a whole rewrite of something. Like, just, like, get some, like, hey, is this okay? Blah, 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 blah. Like, I feel like he couldn't even do the bare minimum of that.
No. And the thing is that, like, he had 4 or 5 writers. So the story goes is that when he first started talking about this movie back in 2009, he had been meeting with people for like 7 months, and essentially told everybody that he was going to be building out this saga, this whole franchise of a film. And he actually met with people for 7 months consistently talking about the story before he handed out the different kind of jobs to each one for each film, you know, like each movie. Per se, like, okay, you're going to do 2, you're going to do 3, blah, 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 blah. But every single one of those guys, it's like, I don't understand why, out of all those people that were in this, that were deemed worthy enough to write the screenplays, weren't given, like you said, consultants, people to, you know, reference towards, or people you can pull information from, or even do what Disney does and send them to places to gather information or at least some type of stock in, like, okay, So we're going to kind of mirror this type of people or this tribe or like, because it's plain and apparent in this movie. The water tribe is the Polynesian people. They are Pacific Islanders. Yeah. From the tattoos to having the iconic Pacific Islander actor of our age, Cliff Curtis, play the lead role for that tribe.
And he's Maori. And they also do the... It almost looks like they start almost we're going to start to do a haka at one point where they're extending their tongues and they're in there's so many things. And
I'm just it's one of those things where it's like the more and more that I keep thinking about the movie, the more and more it just continues to just surprise me in how what's the best way to put it? How blind people are going into this movie just for the gimmick of 3D, which I want to talk about that for a second, mm-hmm. Spence. So in contrast to the first film's mm-hmm. 3D gimmick, how did this film fare?
All right. So talking briefly about the first film, 3D. I felt like the first film's 3D was actually very impressive compared to everything else out at the time. Where the first time, like other movies were just like, oh, there's something coming at your face. And it's like, every movie was that. And it was kind of lame and annoying. So I got dragged to the 3D version of Avatar. I didn't really want to go see in 3D originally. Mm-hmm. But because, like, at the time they had chose to use, like, this atmospheric 3D where you felt like you were in certain environments during certain scenes, it was kind of breathtaking. And I saw it again in 3D, which I've done for no other movie before. Mm-hmm. So, like, I was really impressed with the 3D. Like, in, like... Like, after I was done with that movie, like, that was the only thing to talk about from first Avatar was the 3D effects.
Very true.
Because otherwise, like, just Pocahontas in space, whatever. Mm. Blue cat people.
Yep.
So coming into this movie, I was, again, like, the only way I could see this movie is in 3D because that was the best way to see the first one, in my opinion. So I was like, let's see if they have kept up and have, like, something new to show off. And... For me, in this one, I feel like it's kind of just a little bit of a step back because a lot of the movie has more of a pop-up book feel to it than, like, there are certain scenes that do go back to that atmospheric thing that they were doing before, but not nearly as many. At least I feel like it's not as many. It's been, like, 13 years since I've seen the first one, so it's kind of hard to remember how much it actually happened. But, yeah, it just... kind of gave this like pop-up picture book impression for most of the movie to me, and then after a certain point, like, it kind of just like faded in the background of my mind because it wasn't a thing that made me feel present until the children were in like the actual ocean, and once you go under the water in the ocean, things kind of go back into the atmospheric thing, and that was like a pretty cool scene, like the first time they're in the ocean. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of about it for 3D. And, like, for that movie, I was like, yeah, you can just see it regular, really. You're not missing a whole lot. Because, like, the first movie, I felt like 3D, like, that was something. And, like, I was like, yeah, if you see this movie, 3D. I have never recommended a movie in 3D before and have not since. And it's still, that's the only one, Avatar.
See, when I was watching it today, there was... I'm not usually somebody that's like envious of 3D. I mm-hmm. was watching it. And I was like, okay, this is beautiful. And then there were moments where I could see that it was gimmicky for 3D. Mm-hmm. One specifically was a swirling on fire crab mech coming at the screen. And it was so, I remember it so distinctly because one, crab mechs are ridiculous, but hilarious. Two, it literally did that thing where people like when you go to see a 3D movie where they're like, ah, gimmick, we're throwing things at you. And it's on regular just digital. And I was like, oh, no. And then there was a couple other ones where they're like running through the forest and it feels like they're trying to kind of force you in there. And I was like, oh, I hope this isn't part of the 3D. But I just remember distinctly that one crab mech just like, bink, bink. I'm like, nope.
I think that happened late enough in the movie that my brain had mentally checked out of the 3D. Because like, I don't actually remember that because I would have... like noted that in my mind. It's like, oh, they did a gimmicky 3D thing here. That's not acceptable. Because like Avatar 1, I do not remember a gimmicky three portion, unless I'm wrong. If anyone would like to correct me on, like,
I don't think you're wrong. Yeah. I didn't see it in 3D.
It might have been one of those things where, like, the sum of it was good, so you just disregard. Possibly. But this movie is like, I literally. By the way, I went through all four of the other screenwriters for this movie. Mm-hmm. All white.
Yeah.
All American.
Of course.
Yeah, they're all. I mean, they might be Jewish. Because I was looking at the categories wise and it says like Jewish screenwriters, whatever. But I'm like, no, this is not the same.
We should also point out, I believe James Cameron is Canadian.
James Cameron.
Yeah. Sorry. We're gonna triple check that one for me.
In Kapuskasing, Ontario, Canada. He moved to the U.S. in 1971. He can go back.
We'll take Ryan Reynolds. We'll give you back James Cameron.
I don't know. Ryan Reynolds is a proud Canadian, so I don't know.
And they are proud of their boy, James Cameron.
The biggest part of this movie, I feel like. Oh, I'm sorry. Was that it about the 3D?
Yeah, that was about it.
Okay, because like I said, the first time around, and I don't recall either seeing the movie and finding like a gimmicky part, because I would have found it immediately in the first movie. Or at least I think I would have found it, because 3D at the time was just really like crass and
doing the same thing.
Yeah. It's like, you know, go see Spy Kids 3D and there's like a ball going forward or there's
something. Oh my gosh, Spy Kids 3D is so bad.
Yeah.
The mech arm comes out. Yes.
And
yes.
And you got
a Montalban in his wheelchair that flies over your head.
Yeah, you got Khan in the wheelchair.
So smooth.
With Rocky.
Even and years later.
That was great.
Yes. And then Steve Buscemi with all the dinosaurs.
No, they were flying pigs.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, get it right.
And Alan Cumming.
This movie is one of those movies where, honestly, there was a lot more expectation on this. Mm-hmm. There was a lot more on the larger part of things. When it comes to conversations, when it comes to film critics, when it comes to so many other people who are looking for the great American film to be presented to the world, this was one of those ones. Because you give somebody so much time like that. Like, this isn't like Stanley Kubrick. Stanley Kubrick could sit on something and say, okay, I'm going to make this movie. I'm going to make Beauty and the Beast in space on LSD. And he gives him
that.
And you give him like 6 years. The man's going to deliver Beauty and the Beast in space on LSD to a level of 10.
I would watch that.
James Cameron, I think, honestly, has been one of those directors who we've just put on a pedestal. For the fact that, I mean, he's the guy who brought us Terminator movies. He's the one who brought us the fun movie True Lies. His huge entry into cinematic history, Titanic.
I didn't see until I was in my mid-20s. I ignored it because of all the hype. And mind you, I love, historically, I had an entire Titanic phase. I loved the Titanic. I read all the books. I watched all the documentaries. I did all that. I loved it. And it was like, oh, the Titanic. And I was like, eh. I don't want, and everybody was like, there were years and years and years of like how much of an epic this was. And I think the fact that people were trying to shove it down my throat even more made me go, I'm okay.
I mean, this is also the same man who brought us things like The Abyss. He brought us the sequel to the Alien movie, Aliens.
Oh, that was good.
You know, he brought us unique entries into the sci-fi space genre. So with Avatar in 2009, the idea was he was going to come back and bring us something even better. And I honestly feel like that didn't happen. I mean, what do you guys think? Do you guys feel like this is as good as what you were expecting, or was it in the most plainest of terms?
It's really hard to say because, like, my own internal bar was pretty low for this film, and I think it still somehow tripped over it. Like, because, like, I guess I was expecting, like, there to be, like, a slightly more thoughtful 3D, and for the story to not be so sprawling as it is. And I don't know, like, I don't know why I thought that last one, though, because, like, the last one was, like, Avatar 1 is very long as well. But, yeah, I expected something different and better and not to be as retready as it is in its current form.
The first Avatar was 2 hours, 42 minutes.
That was still long for its time, considering.
Yeah, yeah. Seeing as back in 2009 when movies were still getting into the, you know, getting into that fray of 2.5 hours to 3 hour time frames.
Yeah.
What about you, Ames?
I like the tripping over the bar. That was a great, great analogy. I can see it. In comparison, I was happy to leave them on Pandora in that first movie and not have to worry about it again.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the story itself was self-contained, but because the opportunity to leave the door closed or to let other people have a chance at it was available. And much like James Cameron, the second movie was overindulgent and bloated with its own importance and arrogance. Wow, I should have saved that for the end. That's a great line.
That's a great line to end on, unfortunately.
Man, I couldn't help it. The brain wants what the brain wants.
In terms of any highlights, was there anything worth highlighting out of this movie?
You notice how I erased the word highlights?
I did. I saw that. I was looking at the notes and I'm like, where'd he go? I thought I had two words.
There are things I would like to honor in this film. First off, the voice acting for everybody that was in a mocap, including the person that was Sigourney Weaver's person in a mocap.
Kitty. Oh, yeah. the character.
Yeah, the character. The work that they did, as well as the VFX artists, I will applaud. It might, the work that the VFX team did on this, it is the most expensive, and I told Spencer, it's the most expensive screensaver to date.
Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. You could have just given me 2 hours of a screensaver and I would have been fine. And the voice acting was done. And it was okay. I love Zoe Saldana. Like, not that she can do no wrong, but she is such a force to be reckoned with. And I think there was an interview they were doing press for this movie. She had done 25 movies since the first Avatar came out, and Sam Worthington had done 24. And I'm like, that is still absolutely stunning.
And even in that mindset as well, the fact that you have an actress who was in the movie, actress Edie Falco, who played the general, who didn't even know the movie had, you know, hadn't been released, who thought it had already, she filmed all of her scenes 4 years ago and thought the film had already released and didn't do well. So when last year, when she started hearing that the movie was going to get released, she goes, oh, I thought that released already. Like, what?
4 years ago. That's crazy.
That's crazy.
The children probably have grown up a very good chunk by this point.
Yeah, actually, I was looking at the IMDb page for the guy who plays a spider in the movie.
Yeah.
And I was like, this guy looks unrecognizable to him.
Yeah, he does not look like Spider anymore.
Congratulations, Spider. You unspidered.
I know you erased it, Spence, but did you have a highlight?
Something that made you go, ha ha, I liked that. That's dumb.
So, you know, it's a very beautiful looking movie. And, you know, it's good enough to where, like, I was telling Eddie this, that, like, I feel like they could have released, like, a Planet Earth-style Pandora
thing
on Disney Plus, where it's just, like, going through the water and you look at some crazy animals and Morgan Freeman talks about nothing.
Oh, yeah. Like, absolutely.
30 minutes.
I'd pay to listen to Morgan Freeman.
Yeah. So, like, it looks good enough for that.
Give the money to an actual person of color.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I was like, yeah, I guess, like, from like an art style perspective, like, the movie does look good.
Yeah.
It's got that going for it.
Yeah. Sure. And honestly, like, this movie was way too long. Like, there was so much going on in this movie that I felt like it was trying to include so many different plot lines that it was like hammering, hey, this is important, pay attention to this. Hey, this is important, pay attention to that. Hey, this is also important, pay attention to this. I got Free Willy. I got, you know, what was that movie with what was his name, Ted Danson, and where he plays like a stepfather or something.
I mean, I was just voting for Free Blue Willy, Avatar 2 Free Blue Willy. Like, there was like found family, protecting your family,
getting even with dad. Like, Ted Danson plays like this guy who marries this woman whose son is Macaulay Culkin, and he is also like a thief, And so he essentially marries the wife so that he can get access to something. And Macaulay Culkin plays the stepkid who just wreaks havoc on this guy's plans. This was also that in there with the storyline with Stephen Lang and Spider. Like, and then moments of Titanic, moments of some indigenous Disney film or film that's already been coming out, like Dances with Wolves is throughout this entire movie. There's just so many different premises that you're adding to this storyline that would be a lot more clear and a lot less long if they removed all that to give it just an original storyline. But the fact is that we have a 3-hour movie, right? 3 hours, 12 minutes of several different storylines, along with like
telepathic whales,
teen romance, you know, two different tribes not getting along together, getting along together.
The outsider becoming the inside.
A man coming to copes with his former body is dead, and he's now just an echo of his former self.
I have a child, but I don't have a child, but I have a child.
Yeah,
Mother Earth is speaking to me.
There's a son who doesn't feel like he lives up to the older brother's expectations that he has. Blah blah blah. Like, there's so much going on in this movie. It didn't need to be like this. Would have worked so good as just simply a Disney Plus series. Like, if you would have turned this into like a 6-episode series,
it would have been great.
You would have been fine.
James Cameron would never.
Exactly.
Never in a million years.
And also, we need to point out the fact that after the second episode, this would have been raked so hard over the coals.
Oh, yes.
It wouldn't have. People would not have paid. They'd be like, I'm sorry, whatever, bye. Like, he already paid Disney, or Disney paid him, to literally put the world of Pandora into Animal Kingdom down in Florida. Like, there is literally a small world version of enter into the Navi and experience the world around them. And you're looking at me like I'm crazy, but no, it's true.
No, I believe you. It's crazy. But I'm like, do you happen to know what is in it?
In the boat ride?
Yeah. What is there?
So they have the floating. So they have the floating mountains. And then I guess there's some.
Oh, so it's just like kind of like a small world ride of like, you know, there's floating mountains and a tribe. Oh,
inside, apparently this is so basically think of Adventureland.
Okay.
Where it's supposed to be like a couple of rides and it's experience and oh, you're surrounded by it. Mm-hmm. It's supposed to be like you stepped into Pandora because the outside is like the floating mountains. And then inside on the ride, it's like, yay, we're singing and we're a happy tribe.
Oh, you're talking about the Disney ride itself.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally like a ride through a cave.
But okay. It looks like it's people, anything with a boat that they're singing, I'm going to say Small World.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then, of course, I was just looking online. James Cameron believes streaming services are essentially Ponzi schemes. So
he is a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. He's like,
it worked.
He's like,
I paid money and got something.
He goes, you got to buy one and then you got to buy another one. You got to buy. It's just all a Ponzi scheme.
This is the man who hasn't even been putting the literal money where his mouth is about. I'm giving the world a heads up about the problems because it's not just their problem. If the Amazon gets knocked down, it's our problem. I'm giving the world a heads up. Like, save your diatribe, yeah. Like white man hokum, bro. Just no.
So let's go ahead and jump to.
I'm sorry, I'm so done with this,
so,
man.
I do have a roundtable question for you guys.
Oh, no. What?
I want you guys to pitch me your idea for the next sequel of the Avatar franchise.
I know what it's going to be, though.
Well, apparently it's going to be Fire Tribe.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So it's
here's what we've
here
got.
Here we go.
We've got Earth, Water, Fire. Next one is air. And so we just bring it all back to Avatar.
We already have the air people.
Airbender.
The sky people.
No.
That's the white people.
No. Aang
is the ultimate person that comes from Earth.
We bring forth a fourth hidden tribe. They're like, we just... there was a great
smell. The smell tribe is coming and we have to be worried.
They're the mole people.
No, there's a higher sky tribe, right? And they've just been watching all this, and it's like, we got in a fight a long time ago and we didn't want to do anything about this, but now they're going to wreck our planet and we're coming back. And so now you have to deal with sky people versus sky people versus the rest of the Navi.
Amy.
All right.
I hope you can try to top that.
Strap in. Nerd On has been teaching me how to do elevator pitches, and man, I got to keep a straight face.
Okay.
Let's hear it. So we have decided to declare war against the Sky People, aka Earth. Mm-hmm. Now, after they have murdered all of our super intelligent whales for their brain blubber, we are desperate. Oh,
by the way, I'm sorry. Do you know that James Cameron literally took the name of that brain blubber stuff from Hinduism?
Oh.
Amrit or Amrita is a concept from Hindu mythology. It is a drink or food which makes the consumer...
A-M-I-R-I-T-E?
A-M-R-I-T.
Oh.
Or A-M-R-I-T-A. It's a food or drink which makes the consumer immune to death, or metaphorically, which addresses serious issues leading to death, such as antitoxins, vaccines, antidotes, poison, blah, blah, blah. For example, vaccines have been called Amrit, as have revolutionary treatments like chemotherapy. This is a concept running through Hinduism from Vedic times. He literally stole from Middle Eastern mythology so that he could have something unique to call his whale blubber, whale brain juice.
Well, after everyone got mad about unobtainium, like, he's like, I gotta steal a name from somewhere.
He couldn't be original. I'm sorry. Continue.
No, unobtainium is him being original.
That's idiotic and original. Go ahead.
Okay. Continue.
So, after we have continued to attempt to murder as many whales for their brain blubber as we can, we have delved farther into the mountains and found there is another tribe that is much like Garuk. In Breath of the Wild, they are the Fire Nation, and they have realized that as long as the sky demons stay above, the water people and the other Na'vi that are less sweaty, mostly wet, will be able to take this fight to them, and once we can rise up like the Molochs and take the surface world for ourselves. But air quotes, expected savior arrives, and it's not Jake Sully. It's Kiri. It's Sigourney Weaver once again, possessed as the true avatar of Mother Earth
that comes forth
and drives everything to the surface. And thus, in one great swelling moment, she kills everybody.
I honestly thought you're going with Jake Sully goes to the mountains and says, come help. And then Gimli walks up and says, and my axe.
And you have my bow.
I thought you were going with a place that Jake Sully goes to, like, these Earth people, and he finds out that his brother is there because he's been downloaded from the network while he died. And so now he's in one of their bodies.
Can we have the conversation that we have written a better avatar to?
Eddie,
I need your pitch. This is not fair. I have brought forth the option that Sigourney Weaver is the savior and murderer of us all.
I'm going to go a step further. Okay, so we have the ultimate demise or defeat, not demise, defeat of all the tribes. And Jake Sully learns that there is a mythical quest that he must take into the deepest part of the highest mountain where he must bring Kitty with him. And he goes... And he finds that there is a old but yet still functioning computer system that is working within the mountain, where he comes to find all the vines that are traveling to all over the parts of Pandora are actual cabling.
Yes.
And that the system, it's the AWA system, is actually an acronym for a highly intelligent computer system.
Yes, I'm here. Let's go.
That connects with all the major hubs, which are the trees. Which is why every time they connect into it, they are downloading more information and uploading more information of themselves. And comes to find out that Kitty is not only the key to the situation, but when she fully connects into the mainframe, she becomes Ultron and destroys every single...
In other words, it's coming back to Sigourney Weaver is the only one that survives.
Here's my second pitch. Same situation, but after Jake Sully... sees this entire computer system, he turns and he hears ay 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 ay, and you hear Zordon say, Kitty, you are a teenager who is ready to, and Kitty is given a power morpher and turns into the Na'vi Ranger, who then obliterates everything. And Stephen Lang somehow gets his own mech, and he's walking around in this giant mech suit that the Earth people have made for him to fight, because they've already made smaller mech suits, so they make him big one, and they have this big out battle, and she uses her AWA powers to blast him into oblivion.
Wow. We write really good Avatar movies. This table is full of just so many opportunities. Hollywood, I know you hear us. Come hire us. We're cheerful and we work. Well, they work for money. I'm an intern.
So, wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, see if the film passes or fails, and how many monocles. Excuse me. Let's start with Amy.
Yeah. We don't have enough sheep, if I was going to be brutally honest about this. This movie fails. Okay. Suck them eggs as fails. I was a lot more eloquent earlier on. There is next to no representation of it. Two people of... one of Maori descent and one of a Black Latina does not make you a fully cohesive and or partner with the communities that you are trying to represent. You are an old white man who is getting his rocks off by appropriating cultures, and I am freaking sick of it. This is the polite version of me, okay? You are, as I stated before, overindulgent, arrogant, and this is bloated. You make pretty things, but I will not be supporting you. Make as many avatars as you want. You are not my last airbender. How many negative monocles can I give this?
We have a positive...
negative one monocles. It's an imaginary number. It never exists. Neither should this movie.
We have a limit to the delegation. We have a limit of 5 positive, but we have a infinite number of negatives. So
negative one is an imaginary number, and therefore,
and or
is
it a magic is negative number.
I? It's I.
Negative. It's yeah, I. So basically. It's nothing of nothing. It's nothing. I delegate
nerds.
And pass
very much so.
Pass my time to the rest of the board.
This is not Congress, okay? McCarthy, take it easy.
Oh, that's rude. Take that back. Take that back. I have no concessions. Take that back.
Spencer, go ahead.
I will unintern. Where's the hold music? I will take these headphones off and I will do it again.
The comment has been rescinded. We are passing the time.
Thank you.
Spencer.
Okay, so obviously not for me. This movie does not pass at all. Like, I guess you've told a story, but it is just so all over the place. Also, this was something I should have mentioned as an issue. Jake has too many kids. Like, I can't keep track of all these dang kids. Like,
one's adopted. It's an avatar of a woman in an avatar.
Yeah, but that's still too many. Like, he treats it.
It's a blended family. Yeah, like, honestly, if there's a white person who's going to make a movie about.
Family.
If there's a white movie who's going to. If there's a white director who's going to make a movie about a person of color, of course he's going to make them have a lot of kids. Come on. Seriously.
Rude.
I'm just saying that's the truth.
This is true. This movie needs to be shorter and have a bit more focus and a little less. Teen/child angst would be really helpful, I feel like. But yeah, I really need to see more creativity in these, because like, this is just kind of garbage. Like, it's just a really pretty picture with no substance to it.
Yeah.
And that's annoying. And it's really annoying to watch for 3 hours. So for me, this is going to get a zero.
Zero monocles. There you go.
Imaginary numbers are great too, Spencer. mathematicians love them.
In terms of myself, this film does not pass. It is essentially taken from several other movies, several other stories again, and removing the 3D gimmick in the viewing experience drastically changes that experience altogether. You're no longer expecting to see things come at you, fly at you, whatever. You're now in it for the story, and the story is not good. In terms of like the follow through, the consistency of the story, the resolution for it, I got none. This movie really kind of just left you on this like, so another 10 years? Like, that's what I'm expecting to see the next movie. So it fails in that aspect. In terms of monocles, now, here's the thing. I got to give credit to where credit is due. For all the tireless individuals who worked hard on the digital effects, the CG, kind of to what Spencer had mentioned earlier, Weta, Amazon Web Services, all those teams out there who worked endlessly to the bone. I give you so much credit for having to deal with somebody as pompous as James Cameron.
And we praise you for all the hard work that you do. Keep on doing it, just not with him, please.
Yeah. So I say this with that in mind. I give it a one monocle for the special effects teams and the CG and 3D artists, all those people who worked to no end to make the most realistic water on a hand on a mythical beast in an ocean look as realistic as they did. You guys are the true champions. You guys are the real heroes. I give you guys that monocle because the rest of this film is another form of the white savior complex put into a form that is supposed to look like it's a movie for me, a person of color. It's a movie for you, Amy or Spencer, as a person of color. And as I see it, I see nothing of myself in this movie. I see nothing of my own representation in this movie. And I choose to say no. So with that said, yeah, James Cameron, you can suck it.
Yeah. I mean, I think the best line to sum up this movie was the littlest kid when she goes, "I can't believe I got captured again.
Oh my gosh, that girl.
That's literally the highlight of that
she
movie.
She got captured two times.
That was the only time I felt represented in this movie.
Crap.
It's like I got captured again.
Crap.
But that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out on our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got everything from action to comedy to romance to suspense, even to conversations about the industry. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website, filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out at our website, on our social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. There you can catch all of our constant posts that we make, as well as information on Spencer's Big Score, and of course, Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found...
It's the only place it's ever lived on Instagram, which is at Jane Unseen. Still an intern, though.
Yes.
Yes.
You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, the app, not the place. Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire. Find us there. Follow us, subscribe, listen in. If you think we're good, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line in the comments in those places below. We are excited as we are gearing up for this new year. We're actually got a lot of stuff in store for not only this month, but this first half of the year. And as we plan out the full year, we're kind of excited to be presenting things to you guys. So we hope you are excited too. A lot of new things happening in 2023 and things are changing fast. So we are glad that you are still listening to us. We appreciate you having us bring you into the new year. And we can't wait for you to join us on future journeys. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
Still intern and Amy.
Class dismissed.